Today we are going to be talking about the murder of Ryan Poston, a lawyer in Kentucky, was murdered by his girlfriend, Shayna Hubers, on October 12, 2012. Ryan was supposed to meet a beauty pageant champion for drinks and to play pool, but this did not set well with Shayna. She had different plans. Let's dive into this case.
Welcome back for another deep dive with us. This one, this is a case that's been requested a lot, the murder of Ryan Poston by Shayna Hubers. And you sent me a ton of stuff on this, articles and court documents and, wow, even some psychological analyses. It's a lot.
It's a fascinating case for sure. Lots of layers to unpack.
Yeah, it seems like from what I've read so far that Shayna was kind of painted as like the, you know, the classic obsessive girlfriend.
Yeah.
But it's never that simple, is it?
Never. Especially with a case like this, there are so many factors at play. We need to look at both sides of the story.
Exactly. So, yeah, we'll definitely dive into that whole obsessive girlfriend angle. But we're also going to look at Ryan, you know, what was he like? What was their relationship really like? And, of course, the legal battles. Because this one went through a lot of twists and turns.
It did.
It reminds me a little of the Jodi Arias case. You know, that kind of unsettling mix of charm and, well, just unsettling behavior.
Right. Those cases where it's hard to pin down exactly what motivated the killer, what their state of mind was at the time.
Yeah, for sure. But let's not get too ahead of ourselves. Let's start at the beginning, right? Tell me about Ryan Poston. What kind of guy was he?
From everything I've read, he seemed to have it all going for him. Ambitious, kind, well-liked. His family seemed really close.
Yes. He definitely seemed to be a rising star. You know, went to good schools, traveled internationally, was already building a successful career before even starting law school.
Wow. It sounds like he had such a bright future ahead of him.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then Shayna enters the picture. She was how old when they met?
19. She was 19 and Ryan was 28.
Okay. So there's a significant age gap there. Now, obviously, a legal and consensual relationship. But, I mean, that age difference does make you wonder about the power dynamic.
It does. It's something to keep in mind as we go through the story.
Okay. So Shayna at 19. What do we know about her at that point?
Well, she definitely came across as charming. She had a lot of friends. But even going back to her high school years, there are some hints of, I don't know, maybe possessive tendencies, a need for control.
Oh, interesting. So maybe some early signs there. Yeah. And sometimes those early patterns can be really telling.
Yeah.
Maybe not at the time, but when you look back, it's like, oh, wow.
It's like foreshadowing almost. Okay. So their relationship, what was that like? I know it was on again, off again for quite a while.
Very tumultuous. Lots of breakups and makeups.
And it seems like Shayna had a really hard time letting go.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, like showing up at his place unannounced.
Doing his chores.
Doing his chores.
Yeah, you know, trying to be the good girlfriend.
But maybe it was more than that.
I think it's fair to say it went beyond just being helpful. I think it was a way for her to try to control the situation.
Yeah.
Maybe even manipulate him.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And Ryan was actually confiding in his friends and family about this, right?
He was. He was telling people that he was worried about her behavior.
He even tried to get her out of his condo.
Yes, he actually sought legal help with that.
And that's where the restraining order issue comes in, right?
Exactly. In Kentucky, the law requires that couples live together for a restraining order to be granted.
So he couldn't get one because they weren't living together.
That's right.
That must have been so frustrating for him.
I can imagine. Especially given that he was studying to be a lawyer. He knew the law.
But couldn't use it to protect himself in this situation.
It's a real catch-22.
Okay, so let's fast forward a bit. To the night of the murder, October 12th, 2012, Ryan had spent the evening with his family watching a political debate.
Right, a nice family evening.
And then later that night, he breaks up with Shayna again.
And her reaction is intense.
Very intense. She calls her mother at like 3 in the morning, practically hyperventilating.
Her mom actually thought she was having a heart attack. Drove 2.5 hours to be with her.
Wow. So she was really distraught. Now, here's a crucial detail. Ryan had a date planned that very night with Audrey Bolte.
Audrey Bolt?
Yeah, former Miss Ohio, Miss America runner-up.
Wow, he was moving on.
It seems like it. Obviously, that date never happened. Audrey was left wondering why he didn't show up, completely unaware of the tragedy that was unfolding.
It's heartbreaking.
So now we get to the 911 call.
This is where things get really intense.
Yeah. Brace yourself, because it's a tough one.
Campbell County 911.
Ma'am, I killed my boyfriend in self-defense.
Okay, where are you at?
I'm at 12 Meadow Lane, Highland Heights, Kentucky.
What did you kill him with?
A gun, a loaded gun in the house.
tell me where the gun is right now.
The gun is in the house.
Where at, though, ma'am? Tell me where it's at.
I laid it on the bookshelf.
Where at? Laying on a shelf?
On the bookshelf.
Where are you?
I'm standing about 10 feet from his dead body.
Okay, are you sure that he is dead?
He's dead, ma'am. He's completely dead.
Okay. And how long ago did you shoot him?
I don't know, 15, 10 minutes, not even that long.
Like, 10 or 15 minutes ago?
Yeah.
What's your name?
My name is Shayna Michelle Huber.
I'm sorry, what is it again? Tell me.
Shayna Michelle Huber. I mean, I'm not a murderer, ma'am. I just killed him.
What happened exactly? What happened?
He beat me and tried to carry me out of the house, and I came back in to get my things, and he was right in front of me, and he reached down and grabbed the gun, and I grabbed it out of his hand and pulled the trigger.
Okay. All right. Do you need an ambulance? Have you been injured?
I'm not injured, ma'am. I was thrown into the side of the couch.
Okay. And how old is he?
He's 29. He'll be 30. He would have been 30 on December the 30th.
All right. What's his name?
Carter Poston. He's an attorney in Cincinnati.
Okay. Have you had a history of domestic violence with him?
Yes.
Okay. And is this your gun?
No, this is his gun. He keeps loaded guns in the house.
So he slammed you into the couch, but you don't have any injuries?
I don't have any injuries. I was just very frightened. He's a lot bigger than me. He's 6'3", 200 pounds. I'm 5'8", 120. And he picked me up and was carrying me out of the house. And I said, let me get my things at least if we're going to break up. And he wouldn't let me get my things. And when I reached around to try to get my things, I can hear myself echoing in the background, ma'am.
It's just this phone system. This phone system has got a delay.
And he pushed me down from the door all the way to the couch. And when they come here, they'll see how far that is. He threw me across the room. And I was very startled. I was laying on the floor.
Okay. All right.
And I killed him.
Okay.
And then because he was twitching and I knew he was going to die anyway and he was making funny noises, I shot him a couple more times just to kill him because I knew he would have been.
I'm sorry, you said you shot him a couple more times after that?
Yeah.
How many times did you shoot him total?
I don't know.
Okay, because he was twitching and you knew he was going to die, so you shot him again?
Enough to make sure he was dead because he was twitching so bad and I didn't want to watch him lay there and twitch.
So you shot him instead of calling 911?
Do what? Yeah, I did because I knew he was going to die anyway.
Okay.
He was pretty bad.
Shayna's demeanor throughout the call is, well, it's not what you'd expect at all.
It's chilling, to say the least. It's one of those things where, you know, it's not just a call for help. It's evidence.
Yeah.
You can hear her state of mind in her voice.
Right. And thankfully, the source material you sent me actually includes excerpts from the call. So we can actually hear her voice as she's describing what happened. And it's really chilling.
I bet.
I mean, she admits to killing him, but it's in this almost casual way, like she's ordering a pizza or something.
That's so disturbing.
It really is. There's this one part that really stuck with me. She tells the dispatcher she continued shooting Ryan because he was twitching.
Yeah.
And she wanted to put him out of his misery.
I couldn't stand to watch him twitch. I knew he was going to die or have a completely deformed face. He's very vain and wants to get a nose job. And I shot him right here. I gave him his nose job.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So she's claiming she was being merciful.
Right.
But that doesn't really line up with the forensic evidence.
Oh!
Because the evidence suggests that Ryan was alive until the very last shot.
Oh, wow. So her claim of mercy
doesn't hold up.
Yeah, it feels very disingenuous.
It's a strange juxtaposition, isn't it?
Okay.
The cold-blooded act of shooting someone multiple times.
Yeah.
And then this supposed act of compassion.
Right, like trying to make it seem like she was doing him a favor.
Exactly.
And as if the 911 call wasn't unsettling enough. Her behavior during the interrogation is even more bizarre.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's like singing, dancing, making jokes. It's almost like she's completely detached from reality.
Thank you. I did.
It's giving very much Jodi Arias vibes.
Yay.
That same kind of performing for the camera.
Yeah.
Maybe a way to control the narrative. Deflect from any real remorse.
I think you're right. It's like a manipulation tactic. You see it sometimes in these kinds of cases.
Absolutely.
There's a quote from the interrogation that I found really disturbing. She says, I'm worried no one will want to marry me now.
Wow.
Like, that's her biggest concern.
It's just wild.
It is totally lacking in any kind of empathy or remorse.
Yeah, it's all about her, how this situation affects her.
It's all about Shayna. And then on top of all that, her story keeps changing.
Oh, how so?
Well, in the 911 call, she says Ryan grabbed the gun first, but then later she says she took it from the table.
So which is it?
Exactly.
It makes you question her credibility.
Good time.
And does the crime scene back up her claims of a struggle?
Not at all. No signs of a fight. Furniture's all undisturbed.
So that contradicts the self-defense story.
Completely.
It just doesn't add up.
Okay, so then we get to the first trial in 2015. The prosecution presents a pretty straightforward case.
Expert testimony witness, a forensic expert from New Jersey, was called, spent a long time going through all the evidence, and when he was called to the stand, although he didn't use this word, he basically said that she, Shayna Hubers, was the aggressor.
We have a shot to the head, which is administered to the head and is incapacitating with no stippling at a distance, which puts the victim down on his face on the table. At that point, the suspect moves forward. The victim was alive for all of the shots. So I believe the first three shots in and of themselves were very damaging, but he remained alive until the last shot was given.
Shayna as the obsessive girlfriend, driven to murder by jealousy and possessiveness.
Makes sense.
And they have some pretty damning evidence, like text messages where she tells a friend she wants to kill Ryan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, those were sent just days before the murder. It's hard to argue with that kind of evidence.
Yeah, that's pretty incriminating.
And then there's the testimony from her cellmate.
Cicely Miller was in the Campbell County Jail with Hubers. She says she came forward with what Hubers told her because she felt sorry for Poston's family.
Did she ever at times laugh about certain parts of the incident that happened on October 12th of 2012?
Oh, yes.
Which parts did she laugh about?
The thing about shooting in the face and giving him the nose job he always wanted.
Miller says it bothered her that Hubers laughed. In her words, cackled about it.
She says she was going to plead insanity, but then she said that she was too smart because she has an IQ of Einstein, up to the IQ of Einstein, and so she's going to plead the white battered syndrome.
What did the cellmate say?
The cellmate claims that Shayna actually bragged about the murder.
No.
Yeah, and that she was planning to use the battered wife defense.
That's a huge bombshell.
It is, right?
If she was genuinely afraid for her life, why would she be bragging about it?
That's the question, isn't it? And then to top it all off, Ryan's downstairs neighbors testified that they didn't hear any signs of a struggle.
Just the gunshots.
Just the gunshots.
Again, contradicting her story.
Yeah. So with all that evidence, the jury finds her guilty of murder and sentences her to 40 years.
We, the jury, fix the defendant Shayna Hubers' punishment for the offense of murder at 40 years confinement in the penitentiary.
It's clear Ryan Poston had some demons that he was fighting. I don't think you've recognized that you have any yet.
With that, Judge Fred Stein agrees with the jury. Shayna Hubers goes to prison. She'll be there up to 40 years until she's in her 60s.
Wow.
It was a moment of relief for Ryan's family. Obviously, nothing can bring him back.
No, of course not.
But at least there is some sense of justice.
Right. So it seems pretty open and shut at this point.
You would think, right?
No.
But this is the Shayna Hubers case. Things are never that simple.
Oh boy, what happened?
The conviction gets overturned.
What? Why?
It turns out one of the jurors was a convicted felon.
Oh, wow.
Which means they were ineligible to serve on the jury.
So a technicality.
Yeah, a legal technicality. Yeah. Throws the whole case into chaos.
And I'm guessing this led to a retrial.
You guessed it.
Oh.
So Shayna gets another chance.
Unbelievable.
And the twists and turns don't stop there. Before the retrial even begins, Shayna tries to get the venue changed.
Going back, because we did talk about whether or not you could have a fair trial, Your attorney actually said the news coverage had painted a negative image of you and had destroyed the presumption of innocence.
I do believe that. And I do believe that there's been incredibly negative media coverage about me in Cincinnati and in the United States and internationally.
I mean, the media coverage is tied to what was said in court and the evidence presented on both sides.
Correct, but I still feel like the media coverage has been biased against me. And I feel like it's going to be very hard for me to receive a fair trial in this area.
Why?
She claims that all the negative media coverage has biased the potential jury pool.
That's a common tactic.
It is.
But did it work?
No. And it didn't help that her defense team got caught up in a notary forgery scandal.
A notary forgery scandal?
Yeah. The notary who was supposed to be getting signatures for the change of venue petition was forging them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that didn't exactly boost their credibility.
Definitely not.
And then amidst all this legal drama, Shana gets married.
She got married.
To another inmate.
Wait, she got married while in prison?
Yep.
It appears that you've fallen in love.
Yes.
How did that happen?
I can only describe it as like a spiritual encounter that I had with another person that I met here a couple years ago that I grew to know over the years. Mm-hmm. And we just got really close and, you know, we're both forced into a similar situation. And Unique and I have a lot in common and we just grew very close over the years. Mm-hmm.
This case just gets wilder and wilder.
Right.
Who did she marry?
Her new spouse is a transgender woman named Unique Taylor. Shana even gave an interview where she claimed they were being discriminated against.
I left Campbell County Jail and was transferred south of here in January of 2016, right after he arrived. So I didn't meet him until, I didn't meet Unique, he, she, until that summer.
Have you heard back from anyone yet?
We have not. And, we've both had people calling the Campbell County Clerk's office. And in my opinion, I feel like we're being spun already. And I feel as if I've already been retaliated against. So.
Even if it's only been 7 days?
Yes.
I mean, do you have confirmation they received your request?
No, I do not. I feel as if I've been retaliated against at the actual institution at the jail, because the jailer was contacted by Richard McBee, mm-hmm. Unique Taylor, about our marriage. And within hours of his request to the jailer, letting the jailer know what was going on and that he didn't want any type of retaliation, I was moved to a different cell. Mm-hmm. And all of my legal documents for my court case were taken from me, and they were taken to the administration office on the other side of the jail.
Because their marriage license was taking so long to process.
It's like she's trying to play the victim again, even though she's the one on trial for murder.
It's a very calculated move.
I'd say so.
But finally, after all the delays and side stories, the retrial begins in 2018. So the retrial, right, this is where it gets interesting. They changed their whole strategy.
Oh, really? How so?
Yeah, they ditched the self-defense claims completely.
Wow. What are they going with instead?
This time, it's extreme emotional disturbance and PTSD.
PTSD. Interesting. So they're basically saying she wasn't in control of her actions.
Exactly. They argue that all this past trauma, specifically alleged sexual abuse from her high school years, you know, it kind of led to this violent outburst.
But how do they connect that to the murder? All these years later.
Well, they try to paint Ryan as this controlling and abusive boyfriend.
So they're shifting the blame.
In a way, yeah. They say he was constantly criticizing her, belittling her, putting her down.
Trying to make her seem like the victim.
Right. Like she was pushed to a breaking point. And remember, this was back in 2012, 2013.
Right.
Awareness of things like emotional abuse, psychological manipulation. It wasn't as widespread as it is now.
So they're trying to use that to their advantage.
Exactly. And this time, Shana actually takes the stand herself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She describes months of alleged abuse, says Ryan had all these rules for her, how to dress, how to act, even how to communicate with him.
But is there any evidence to support these claims?
That's the thing. There's no physical evidence, no witnesses to corroborate her story.
So it becomes a he said, she said situation.
Basically. The jury has to decide who they believe.
And what about the prosecution? Do they buy it?
Not for a second. They stick to their original argument, Shayna as the obsessive girlfriend who couldn't let go. They keep hammering on those incriminating text messages.
Right, the ones where she talked about killing Ryan.
Yep. And they bring in witnesses who contradict Shayna's claims, paint her as the aggressor, not the victim.
Any key witnesses stand out?
Well, they had three of Shayna's former cellmates testify.
Cellmates?
Yeah, and each one of them basically said Shayna bragged about the murder. Some even said she laughed about it. And one cellmate even claims Shayna admitted to faking injuries to make Ryan look abusive.
One of the things that we talked about is with Miss Hubers in her statement saying, I'll use her words, thrown around the room like a rag doll, thrown into the bookcase. What was one of your concerns as an investigator when you see this scene?
That there was nothing knocked down on the shelf.
Nothing knocked down on the shelf when you first came.
Correct. There was dust. If you look up on top, there's a card. There's items that could have been knocked over.
Here, it's like a birthday card,
yeah,
or
some type of card. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And nothing at that point in time was out of place.
No, ma'am.
That's pretty damning.
Definitely doesn't help her case. So after 16 days of testimony, all this back and forth, the jury comes back with a verdict.
Yeah.
Guilty of murder.
Judge Daniel Zala just a few seconds ago sentenced Shayna Hubers to life in prison following the jury's recommendations. The defense had asked for 20 years, saying Hubers could be rehabbed and become a productive member of society. But the prosecution said that's not what they want. They wanted the life in prison. They said shooting Ryan Poston was an execution on Shayna's part.
Wow.
This time, she's sentenced to life in prison.
So a much harsher sentence this time around. Seems like the extreme emotional disturbance defense didn't really fly.
Nope. It seems they saw her actions as deliberate and premeditated. And for Ryan's family, it's a bittersweet victory.
She's shown us that she's a manipulator. She has shown us that she will say anything she can to get what she wants, and most importantly, what she showed us on October 12th, 2012, is that she's a murderer.
You know?
Yeah.
Justice is served, but it doesn't bring him back, and they had to relive this whole ordeal again. It's a tragic story all around. I mean, this whole case really makes you think, doesn't it?
It does. It really highlights how important it is to understand the dynamics of domestic violence.
You know?
It's not always physical. Sometimes it's emotional, psychological. And recognizing the warning signs, it can be so hard.
Absolutely. And for anyone listening who wants to dive even deeper into this case, I highly recommend checking out the interrogation footage, the trial footage. It's all online.
I bet that's intense.
It is. It's fascinating and unsettling all at the same time. But yeah, it gives you a real glimpse into Shayna's personality, her behavior. Well, that's our deep dive into the Ryan Poston and Shayna Hubers case.
The real roller coaster.
It really is. Thanks for joining us as we tried to untangle this complex and tragic story, and we'll catch you on the next Deep Dive.
Join us again next time for another Deep Dive into yet another case. Please comment and let us know your thoughts. Thanks.